don't go trying to be a hockey player.
But I am a hockey player, sir. Like you.
I don't play much hockey.
You're a hockey player, sir.
You know they just want you to bleed, right?
Well, I'm here to do whatever they need me to do. You know, if they need me to bleed, then I'll bleed for my team.
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You have my respect. Whatever that means to you, you got it.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Tell me, are you locked in the pond? Andy, are you goofing on Elvis too? Are we losing touch?
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only Campus Bruce Hockey Show. I'm trying to get everything sort of moved over here and microphones associated. Only Campus Bruce Hockey Show, only Campus Bruce Radio Show, Strictly Talks Hockey in this country in terms of what we do here. Always glad to have everybody with us. I'm Teve. With me as always, Jason. How are you, Jay?
I'm doing quite well, quite well.
Good, good. You might be wondering, this isn't a new song, right? Like, what's going on with this? Tonight's introductory song shouldn't be tough for anyone to recognize. That's R.E.M. with their hit Man on the Moon. And we'll fade them back in a little bit. What you may not know, though, is that this album containing this song, album entitled Automatic for the People, was released on October 5th, 1992 in the UK and October 6th, 1992 in North America as this song and album officially turned 32 years old this week.
Whoa.
32 years old this week.
And it's nothing still surprises me anymore.
But again, you hear, and again, I'll say this because maybe I'm just old now, but you hear music like this and you go, what happened? Like, where did this music go? So anyway, the album was originally going to be called Star and featured, quote, rocking guitar-dominated songs, but the band reflected on turning 30 as they legitimately looked at themselves in terms of growing up and how that brought a sense of loss and mourning. Guitarist Peter Buck stated, quote, the world we'd been involved in had disappeared, the world of Husker Du and the Replacements, all that had gone. We were just in a different place in that world. It's worked, and that worked its way out musically and lyrically, unquote, in terms of how they viewed this album. Facts you may not know about this album that might surprise you. Former Led Zeppelin bassist John Paul Jones helped the string arrangements on a few tracks, including Drive and Everybody Hurts. Okay. And the band brought back 11 members of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra that had played on the previous album, Out of Time. Automatic for the People reached number 2 on the Billboard 200 album charts and reached number 1 in the UK. It has sold 18 million copies worldwide and has been certified platinum in the US, the UK, and Australia.
That's awesome.
But again, 32 years ago, this was released. Like, man, I feel old now.
This is like, it doesn't surprise me that certain things are like getting to that point.
Right, but like when you look it up and you go, oh my god, 1992, what are you talking about? Yeah. So Michael Stipe and R.E.M. and all the guys from R.E.M., they've moved on now, but end of the day, still some fantastic music, and Automatic for the People, 32 years old now if you have that album in your collection, folks, so there you go. Do want to say before we get into everything today, we want to wish the best, obviously hope for the best, send our thoughts out to everybody who is going to be facing, who is facing, and is currently maybe got through it. All the Hurricane Milton stuff that's going on in Florida right now, and certainly down on the East Coast. Horrific. I don't know if you saw the baseball stadium down there today.
Yes, I saw that.
And the roof is completely gone. Like,
and that's a spot that they were using as kind of a
Tropicana Field.
Tropicana Fields, where they were a lot of first responders.
Right. Yeah.
Were supposed to be staying as they dealt with everything, and now they can't.
Well, understandably, yeah.
And we've seen that the Tampa Bay Lightning have postponed their home opener against Carolina.
Correct, yeah.
Which very unfortunate.
Ironically, that the Hurricanes and Lightning postponed a game due to Hurricanes and Lightning.
Yeah, but also unfortunate that it is North Carolina, which also is picking up the pieces after Hurricane Helene a few days ago, and then we've got Hurricane Milton, which has now passed over, and
there's still two more that are coming, apparently. Like, they're still, they said there's still two more in the Atlantic could potentially make their way through.
Yeah, it's hurricane season, so it's going to be a bit of a mess down there.
And again, we're venturing way off hockey here, but I mean, just watching this one build, like, you knew this was going to be just an ugly situation.
It was terrifying. Like, the thing for me was not just seeing, like, meteorologists break down in tears on news broadcasts like how scary this is and how big and how fast it grew, but the fact that so many, like, people from Florida are like, yeah, we're not gonna try and wait this one out.
No,
and so many people evacuated. It hasn't been, you know, and news is kind of slowly trickling out, obviously, because that's the way it is. I think at this point, luckily, it's more been like property damage so far, which is good. Hurricane Helene was like, because it was hitting a lot of areas that don't often get hurricanes that severity.
Well, it was more inland than anything.
Yeah, because it went up the East Coast and then into North Carolina.
Yeah.
Whereas Milton just kind of crossed over Florida and went out to sea. So, you know, silver linings, like, obviously there's millions of dollars in property damage to deal with. And a lot of people in Florida still can't get home insurance, which is terrible.
It's fine.
But at least some things are looking up.
I mean, I just hope that everybody's safe, everybody got out, everybody's okay that, you know, had family down there. Obviously, you know, we know a lot of snowbirds end up down there, and, you know, people have property down there that they go to in the winter. Let's just hope that everything's okay for everybody. So we are back, though. Hockey is back, officially kicked off last weekend if you're a Canada West, kicked off this last weekend if you were in the NHL for at least two teams, and then kicked off this week if you're the rest of the NHL, the other 30 teams that were playing. But let's start with the local teams, despite two of them not being in action. As you may know, Manitoba Bison's men's hockey team will be en route to Edmonton for a weekend set with the 2-0 Alberta Golden Bears as they beat up McEwen 6-2-6-4 last weekend. If you didn't hear, Friday night, McEwen held a 2-1 lead into the third period before the Bears dropped 4 goals in 5 minutes and 41 seconds on them.
Ah. Alberta's back.
Ouch. En route to that 6-2 win. Saturday, the Bears jumped out to a 4-0 lead before McEwen had chipped it down to a 4-3 lead. That didn't get any closer, though, as they ended up winning again 6-4 as Alberta scored a couple goals late in that game as well to really help them out and get them ahead of McEwen. So Alberta 2-0. No surprises there, really, though, for what you see, Jay, no?
Yeah, not too much of a surprise. McEwen has, you know, they've had some key departures after last year, so they're going to be, you know, kind of transitioning and getting new people. And they're still getting kind of more settled into recruitment and the quality of play and players and all of that that's existing in Canada West. They've shown some promise, but you're going up against the Alberta Golden Bears, which is never a fun time.
No shortage of success on that side, that's for sure. Yeah. In other games, Saskatchewan Huskies announced their presence in Canada West this season with two decisive wins over the Regina Cougars. The Huskies won 7-1 on Friday as Chance Petruick had a pair of goals and Dawson Holt scored once while adding three helpers. Yep. So pretty good first night for them. Saturday saw Logan Barrows score a hat trick while Dawson Holt increased his weekend point total to 7 with 3 more assists in a 6-2 victory over the Regina Cougars on Saturday. Huskies, a couple decisive wins right
now. Yeah, a couple seasons that were not up to typical Huskies quality, and then they're back to this now.
I mean, Brandon Cote is that team basically ready to roll.
Yes.
And I will say this as nicely as I can. His experience as a junior hockey head coach makes a monster difference in how that team prepares now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, take nothing away from the guys that were there before him, and I'm not trying to, you know, put anything on the back of Mike Babcock by any means, but get out of here. But I mean, you look at the guys like Dave Adolph, who really knew how to prepare a team, and Brandon Cote looks like he's got his team ready to roll in the same manner. So Out on the West Coast, Calgary Dinos got back to their winning ways of the weekend sweep of the UBC Thunderbirds. Took a shootout on Friday, but Adam Kidd scored the shootout winner for the Dinos in their 4-3 victory. Saturday saw Calgary lock down the defensive zone a little bit better as they led 4-0 after 40 minutes en route to the 5-2 win. Colson Gengenbach finished the weekend with 3 goals and 2 helpers for the Dinos.
Yeah, he is going to be a problem in Canada West this year. You've kind of seen him kind of plod his way through, doing quite well over a while here, but definitely if you're thinking of a player to watch this year, just like with the position that he's going to play on that team this year, I think he's gonna, like, if you're trying to lock in a too early player of the year pick, that guy right there.
Well, I mean, Carl Tedichuk might want to have a discussion about that.
Yeah, well, but, you know my feelings about Carl Tedichuk.
In Langley,
give him every award.
Well, yeah, I know. It's going to be a pretty one-sided vote if he has the same season he did a couple years ago. In Langley, the Mount Royal Cougars used back-to-back 6-3 wins over the Trinity Western Spartans to start their campaign with a sweep. MRU's Robbie From Delorme had a goal and 3 assists in Friday's game. That added a couple more assists in Saturday's game for a 6-point weekend as well.
Yeah, I mean, good opening weekend. My question would be, and this is nothing against Trinity Western, but the fact that Mount Royal gave up 6 goals this weekend to Trinity Western, a team that has kind of struggled to put the puck in the back of the net before, I'm already seeing like the big question mark that I had for Mount Royal, which is like, are they going to get their goaltending situation sorted out? And it's still there.
But I was going to say, that's an annual thing for Mount Royal men's team, right? Like, they just don't have that one guy who puts himself in the crease and goes, ain't nothing getting by me today.
Exactly.
Games this weekend, if you're looking to tune in on Canada West TV, include Mount Royal hosting UBC. Saskatchewan will be in Calgary for a date with the Dinos. McEwen visits Regina. And the Bisons, as we mentioned, in Edmonton to tangle with the Golden Bears in their first action. Trinity Western does get to regroup a little bit on the bye week, but they'll be back in action again next weekend. Over on the women's side, the Bisons will welcome the 2-0 Alberta Pandas to Wayne Fleming Arena on Saturday, October 12th, and Sunday, October 13th. Note the dates and times, as there is no Friday game this week, folks. If you're coming down on Friday, ain't nothing to see here. Alberta laid a whooping on the McEwen Griffins this past weekend with a 4-0 win on Friday and a 3-0 win on Saturday, allowing just 23 shots combined all weekend. Looks like Howie Draper's defense is back in town.
There was a little break there by Howie Draper, and the Howie Draper defense is back.
You're going to notice a lot of Manitoba names coming out of here, because a lot of Manitobans had great weekends on the opening weekend here. Maya Amon, who formerly played for the Winnipeg Ice, had 2 goals, while Grace Glover, the former Westman Wildcats netminder, pitched a shutout on Friday. Defender Sarah Kazeel, she scored on Saturday, added 3 helpers on Friday to lead the Pandas in scoring. She's actually at the top of the scoring list right now. So not often you see a defender up there from Alberta, but Alberta's got one of the leading scorers right now. Things were a little different on the women's side when it came to the interprovincial battle in Saskatchewan. Former Westman Wildcats forward Shaylee Scraba scored in the third period for Regina to tie the game at 1-1 between the Cougars and Huskies before Kaylee Dyer potted the overtime winner as Regina defeated Saskatchewan 2-1 in overtime on Friday. And then on Saturday, former Westman Wildcats netminder Natalie Williamson stopped all 23 shots she faced as the Cougars improved to 2-0 with a 1-0 win over the Huskies. Caitlin Gilroy scored the winner late in that game. Regina Cougars 2-0 on the season. Who would have thought for women's hockey? Like, big time goaltending coming out of Natalie Williamson in that second game there. She shut down the Huskies all over the place.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's a great opening weekend for them, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for interim head coach Brandy McMaster West as well, getting 2 straight wins over your interprovincial rivals, absolutely big weekend. UBC continued their winning ways in Canada West this past weekend. Former Balmoral Hall Blazers forward Kareen Sandilands scored both UBC goals before heading to the shootout, where she was the only player to score as well as the T-Birds down the Dinos 3-2 in the Friday night game in that shootout. Saturday saw Sandilands add one more assist, but UBC's balanced scoring came back to life, helped the T-Birds win 6-3 and start the season 2-0 in their what could potentially be their fourth straight banner season.
Yeah, I'm excited to see if they can kind of keep these winning ways going, because like it adds a lot of, because like we know the history of like players talking about how UBC was the team that they least liked to play against.
Well, yeah, yeah,
for very obvious reasons. And now, you know, not only are they hard to play against, they are a banner winning, like a perennial challenger to win a conference championship, so it just makes it even better.
I mean, you want to see some rivalry this year, where, like, you know, a couple teams at the top are pushing for that, you know, that. But I mean, if you're going to have the UBC Alberta, you know, at the very top, sort of battling each other, you want to see those two just punch each other in the mouth a couple of times.
Exactly.
Like, let's get this over and done with. But whatever, we'll see what happens as the season goes on. At the other Calgary school, the Mount Royal Cougars showed their solid player in this season as they downed Trinity Western by 2-0 and 4-0 scores. Athena Hawks scored the first Canada West goal of the season on Friday, while Leah Joma had 3 points in Saturday's contest. Dare I say, the balanced scoring and the solid defense by the Cougars, could they make another run this season?
Ooh, I hope so.
I mean, if there's a team to cheer for that's not in this province, you know that Mount Royal's on our list.
Speaking of the Mount Royal Cougars, Lindsay Janes got hook, line, sinkers to the finals.
There you go, yeah.
Of the floorball three in the John Boy Warehouse Games. The video for the finals is posted tonight.
Okay.
So it's hook, line, sinkers versus Forgotten Rotten hook, line, sinkers, who were 0-3 in the kind of the league round, and then they just charged through the playoffs. Last game, they beat the defending champion McFlurry Power, and now they're off to the finals.
I may have to reach out to Lindsay and see if we'll get her on the show after watching tonight.
I want to talk to her about the floorball and the experience with John Boy Media, because, like,
see how much fun
so much fun.
For games coming up this weekend, if you're tuning in on Canada West TV, Mount Royal will travel to Vancouver to play the Thunderbirds. Dinos are in Saskatoon for a weekend set with the Huskies. Regina looks to keep their winning ways going with a trip to Edmonton to play McEwen. And as stated, Bisons and Pandas will renew acquaintances at Wayne Fleming Arena. Trinity Western again has the bye week, so it appears they'll be practicing, looking for ways to score goals. There was another team from Winnipeg who was in action last night as they absolutely slapped around the defending Western Conference champion Edmonton Oilers. Winnipeg Jets with a 6-0 victory last night. Connor Hellebuck had 30 saves for a 38 shutout of his career. It's the first time that the Thrashers and or Jets franchises pitched a shutout in a season opener. So congratulations to
Not surprising that the Thrashers never did that.
No, I mean they had a couple of decent goalies, but yeah. I mean, nobody Connor Hellebuck style. Kyle Connor also set a new NHL record for scoring in the 7th consecutive season opening game, which is a new NHL record. He was tied with a couple players at 6. So Kyle Connor keeping that record going. Hopefully he can make it 8 next season.
Like,
we'll see.
He's got to be kind of one of the most underrated scorers in the league, right? Because whenever people talk about, like, the guys that are going to make a run for, like, the Rocket Richard, it's always like, oh, well, it's probably going to be Austin Matthews, David Pastrnak, Kucherov gets in there, McDavid's obviously in there. I mean, nobody ever talks about Kyle Connor.
But I think it's injuries. Injuries have always limited his number of games, and that's always a big thing. So we'll see what happens at that point. But quote here from Hellebuck, quote, I just thought the guys in front of me were keeping everything outside, allowing me to see pucks, allowing me to feel it, clearing rebounds, clearing lanes. They made my night really easy. Once in a while, I made a big save, which allowed me to feel like part of the team. So that was just a great team effort tonight, unquote. Yeah. Connor Hellebuck taking no responsibility other than, I made a few saves.
Yeah. What a humble guy.
On the other side, Stuart Skinner allowed 5 goals on 13 shots over 31:08 of time. There goes your Olympic opportunity for you, Stuart Skinner.
Yeah, I mean, it's early, obviously. First game of the season.
I'm giving them hell right now. You know, but I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, they went to the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup final. But it doesn't help the conversation of, will the Oilers ever figure out this goaltending situation? But Stuart Skinner good enough to be your starting goaltender?
But I don't think they can ever figure that out as long as they keep loading up their top two lines with as much talent as they can find. Because those monster contracts are given out to the Darnell Nurses, who was absolutely brutal last night, might I add.
Like, they were kind of...
What are you doing?
They've had to, like, work to get over the hangover of the Pete Chiarelli era, and now they have to work to get over the hangover of the Ken Holland era, and then they're going to have to try and get over the hangover of the Stan Bowman era. Like, at some point, they need to bring in a general man. Well, obviously this is not going to happen because this is the Oilers,
right,
and their front office is filled with ex-Oilers.
Hold on, but you can say the same thing about the Pittsburgh Penguins right now and the way Kyle Dubas has built that team, because that team is an absolute tire fire.
Yes.
And I'll say that as nicely as I can, because you just convinced Crosby to sign for another you know, few years at $8.7 million. You got Evgeny Malkin, who's getting near the end of his career. And what? Oh, we got Rutger McGroarty. Well, Rutger McGroarty was invisible against the Rangers.
Yes.
So thanks for showing up and doing nothing. Tristan Jarry was an absolute hole in the ice. And that defense with Carlson and Letang looks like they're more confused than ever.
Yep.
And I go, this is the Oilers of the East now.
Yep. Well, yeah, I mean, it's
they have Dreisaitl, they have Connor McDavid, they have Malkin, they have Sidney Crosby, and a couple of decent names. And that's about it.
You have a bunch of defensemen making way too much money for what they bring to the table.
An overpaid goalie who can't make saves.
Yep.
And what?
But was an all-star one time.
Oh, please. save it. I'm tired of that. For those asking, Adam Lowry, Mason Appleton, Rasmus Kupari, Dylan Sandberg, Kyle Connor all beat Skinner before he was pulled. Mark Scheifele did beat Calvin Pickard late in the third period to make it the 6-0 game.
All right.
But legitimately, best opening night I think we've ever seen from Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah, they were on it from puck drop. Like the bobble at the blue line, Scheifele grabbing the loose puck going down. Like, I was unhappy with his shot placement, but like, he's Mark Scheifele. I'm not. Like, he's in the NHL. I'm not. The thing for me, like, the moment that I was watching and I was like, oh, the Oilers don't have it right now, was the Rasmus Kupari goal, because he was able to just, he was just like doing donuts in the offensive zone, lost his coverage, and then gets free on the far side.
But that segment where it was Kupari's goal and then Dylan Sandberg's goal, 20 seconds later, you go, absolutely gong show in that defensive zone. What are you guys doing back
exactly.
there?
Exactly. And that was the problem that they had before Jay Woodcroft was fired, is that he tried to get that defensive core to do things that they just were not capable of doing. So they went back to literally the simplest defensive scheme you possibly could have in the National Hockey League.
And now they're getting beat up again because of Knights. Like, well done, guys. But whatever. I mean, we'll have to see if Edmonton is going to win games.
Yeah, they've got Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. They're going to be fine.
If they don't get goaltending a little bit better than what they got last night, holy smokes.
I think what it is, you know, for Edmonton, it's like, all right, you laid an egg game one. Rally and kind of figure it out. For Winnipeg, it's like, oh, you actually like started the season on time. Cool.
But do you want to lay an egg on home ice in front of your home fans when you've got all these new guys in the lineup? And I'll say that only because they have a pile of guys that
they made a lot of changes
that were brought in to you know, help Connor. And yet, last night, it was like none of them even wanted to play. Like, all of them were kind of like, oh, I don't really know what to do here.
The only people that showed up are named Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, even though Leon Draisaitl had a few kind of gaffes.
Still, I mean, you look at that Edmonton team and you go, either everybody's on or everybody's off. Like, it didn't look good last night, so whatever. But speaking of history, the other game featured on Rogers Sportsnet last night had one of the most historic matchups, kicking off their national broadcast schedule. Mm-hmm. Maple Leafs were in Montreal to play the Canadiens. It was a night that Canadiens netminder Sam Montembeau might have put his name on the map for the Olympic team. And I say that only because he's always kind of been in the conversation at the fringe.
But nobody's ever taken it seriously because he was kind of the third or fourth stringer in Florida who kind of played when he had to.
Yeah, I agree.
And then he goes to Montreal and he's just buried on a bad Montreal team
behind Jake Allen. He's stuck behind a couple other players. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, they had Charlie Lindgren for a while and he was just kind of brought in as, we don't have Carey Price anymore. We've got to like try a bunch of things. So they bring in like Montembeau. They got Lindgren. They brought in Jake Allen to kind of be a veteran presence. There was one other guy, the guy that they recently lost on the back in goal. They had like another young goaltending prospect that looked like he was going to be something, and they like traded him away. But Montembeau, for me, it's like, okay, he plays really well when you take into the context that he's playing on a Montreal team that is young, that can't score goals and just needs him to steal games. Imagine when Montreal puts it together and is a good team.
Okay, so when you talk about stealing games, Montembeau set an NHL record with a 48-save opening night shutout in the Maple Leafs. NHL record, 48 saves. So most saves in a shutout on opening night ever, as they beat the Maple Leafs 1-0. It also marked the first time, and this is where Maple Leafs fans are going to cringe, marked the first time since November 20th, 2021 that the Maple Leafs had been shut out in a game. That was a 227-game non-shutout streak that got snapped last night by Sam Montembeau.
Yeah. You think about
all the big goalies in the NHL.
Yeah.
Sam Montembeau is the guy.
Yeah, all the guys they've gone up. Like, because I that's one of the records.
Do you know, okay, here, you want to have a little bit of a funny sort of addendum to this? Mm-hmm. Do you know who the last guy was that shut them out? We already mentioned his name here tonight.
Was it Tristan Jarry?
It was Tristan Jarry of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Another guy who can't make a save with his life dependent on it.
Yeah, because like that was something that it was a record. It was a streak that I've heard mentioned a bunch of times, and I'm like, that can't be right. And I'm like, oh well, it's the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like they've got like offensive weapons. Makes sense. And they haven't lost a ton in the regular season of the last few years, particularly in the Sheldon Keefe era.
Yeah.
But like to have it be like, oh yeah, it's over. It's like, and it just had to be Montreal.
It had to be Montreal. So here's the thing. Toronto now sits one shutout away from the 1965-66 Maple Leafs, who were shut out twice in their first two games to set a franchise record. Mm-hmm. Who do they play next? Sheldon Keefe and the New Jersey Devils.
Who is going... That team is going to be fired up.
With Jacob Markstrom in net.
Yeah. Who already in the two games that he played against Buffalo looked awesome.
So this could be a very...
Team's coming in fired up.
This could be a very bad start for the Maple Leafs, depending on what's happening. They're also now two blankings away from the NHL record set by the 1930-31 Montreal Maroons, who hold the NHL record by being shut out three times in their first three games. Surprisingly now, which may get everybody sort of shocked, Montreal is now one shutout away from tying their franchise record of two straight shutouts to open the season, something they did in 1955-56, excuse me. And perhaps even more surprising is that the Maple Leafs hold the unique NHL record. They posted five straight shutouts to start the season in 1930-31. So there you go. These two teams all over the record
books. I am so surprised. Like, it's one of those, like, the fact that Montreal has never done that before.
Never posted three straight shutouts in a season.
When you think about all of the goaltenders that they've had throughout their history.
Right.
Like, you had Carey Price, Jose Theodore, Patrick Waugh,
even go back to
Jocelyn Thibault, Ken Dryden.
Days of like the Jacques Plantes, like all of the big names when they were winning all those Stanley Cups, and you go, how is that even possible? But they didn't, so... I want to mention today is World Mental Health Day as well, for those who don't know. And I bring this up because, I mean, I think it was the coolest thing ever to see Patrick Laine get a monster cheer from the Montreal faithful last night. Your thoughts on seeing that ovation for number 92?
I mean, I think it's absolutely incredible. Like, a guy who absolutely deserves it.
We heard Sylvain say last week from Montreal that they're excited to see Patrick Laine in the lineup. So, I mean, these guys are thrilled to have him, you know, in the city.
I know that kind of Montreal gets a bit of a bad rap because some of the media there tend to be like a little bit tabloidy with the way that they go after guys, and like they can be kind of much, but like they are it's still one of the best places to play. Like, you can't really take the history aside, but take the history aside for a second.
But look at that introduction.
The fans in Montreal, like. The way that they treat players with like the respect that they show them and the love and the adoration that the city of Montreal has for their players is incredible.
Who else has a 10-piece string, you know, like orchestra on the ice to introduce? Nobody. It's the Montreal Canadiens that did. Like, that was the coolest thing ever.
It's incredible.
So, I mean, super cool to see Patrick Laine get a big shout out last night. Again, guy struggled in Columbus. He was in the player assistance program, but it's gotta feel good to hear the fans behind you even when you're not in the lineup at that point. So nice to see Patrick Laine get a sort of a big smile on his face at that point. Speaking of history, Jessica Campbell officially becomes the first woman to coach on the bench for a full game in the NHL during the regular season. Huge for her. I know she's going to be first to say, you know what, I just walked through doors that other people opened for me in terms of getting everything done. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about now a changing of the guard. And I'll say that only because, according to ESPN last season, all 32 clubs currently employ women in their hockey operations department, roles ranging anywhere from assistant GMs to scouts to analysts to skating coaches to player development positions. So there's women all over the place.
Yeah.
We need to come to grips with the fact that this is going to be more and more prevalent in our lives. And again, I'm not saying that you and I have a problem with this, Jason, but The amount of vitriol I saw on websites about, oh, they're good. Why can't they just stick to their own game? Why can't they stick to their own game?
Give it to the
look at man.
Hire the best possible candidate.
She is.
Look at man. She has gone through hell and back in some cases to get to where she is. She legitimately has earned her way there. Dan Bylsma trusts her instinctively. And it seems like, again, Seattle lost that game with that St. Louis comeback. But the Seattle players look like they're responding to her. We know the Coachella Valley players responded to her.
Yeah.
But she knows what she's doing.
Yeah, she's done it. She worked her way through. Obviously, had a great playing career of her own.
Oh, for
then
sure,
immediately
yeah.
transitioned into coaching, had great success basically all the way leading up to getting this NHL job. She did everything correct. She worked harder to get a job as an NHL assistant coach than some NHL head coaches have done getting their jobs.
Well, there have been guys that have just been swept into positions, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When people, I see people talking about, like, well, just hire the, you know, the most qualified candidate, and then they go out and they hire Joe Schmo, who played 300 games in the NHL.
I'm sorry, there's an NHL team in this city that basically swept a guy into a position as well.
Exactly.
Like, they hired him 3 years ago as an associate coach in the event that we know that the guy's going to retire, so let's just get this guy prepared for that.
Yeah, and where did he coach before that?
Columbus.
What? Yeah. Like, that's the thing.
Columbus.
It's like, okay.
It's terrible there, too.
You know, who, I mean, granted, incredible National Hockey League career, great player, but Martin St. Louis, where was he coaching before he became the Montreal Canadiens head coach?
He was coaching in Connecticut. He was coaching his two teenage sons' hockey teams to, like, perfect seasons. Like, he took everything he learned in the NHL and basically applied it at that high school level or whatever it was just below the high school level, and those kids responded.
Yeah.
And so Montreal came calling and said, hey, listen, we got an idea here.
Yeah, but that's the thing. He went from high school to the NHL.
Well, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong.
Jessica
happen.
Campbell had to go from basically a player to a coach to a skills development coach and did, like, the entire trajectory
I'm taking nothing away from her. I mean, we can talk about Megan Hunter in Chicago. We can talk about Kate Madigan in New Jersey in terms of being assistant GMs. We can talk about Haley Wickenheiser, director of player development in Toronto. We can talk about some of the women that are on the other side of things as well in terms of scouting. We've seen, you know, all sorts of great additions to various different players. Miranda McMillan, for example, is a data analyst for the Montreal Canadiens. We got to see Katarina Wu work with the Pittsburgh Penguins for a while. We've seen, you know, Amanda Kessel got hired this year in terms of getting a bump up. She's now the assistant GM in Wilkes-Barre and is looking after a lot of stuff there. Legitimately, we need to be aware that just because you don't like it doesn't mean that the NHL doesn't like it. And I'll say that because, again, Florida Panthers head coach Paul Maurice is a huge Christine Bumstead fan. Mm-hmm. Christine, who's currently coaching out at the University of Saskatchewan, is a skills coach for the WHL's Saskatoon Blades, said, quote, Christine is going to be a great coach. She is one now. There's a lot of really intelligent young coaches. Some of them are male. Some of them are female. And they now have an opportunity that just wasn't there 20 years ago. He also added to his Associated Press, quote, saying, quote, if you're not willing to change and evolve as a coach, you're done, before noting that, quote, men don't have the market cornered on communication, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Maurice is a guy I could see hiring, and again, I'm not saying that Christine's going to leave, but if the opportunity was there, I could see Paul Maurice hiring a female coach in a heartbeat.
Yeah. It is like, it's the kinds of coaches that, like, these morons on Twitter, like, fawn over, are the ones, are they going to be the first ones to be like, yeah, that woman right there, she needs to be a coach in the NHL. The same person who are making those hiring decisions are the people that these idiots on social media are fawning over.
Again, Dawn Braid was hired as a skating coach in Arizona in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was teaching the Coyotes how to skate better.
Yes.
I mean, whether or not it worked is debatable, but Alyssa Gagliardi is currently coaching an NCAA men's team.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole Kernan coached in the Federal League last year. 5 games in the Federal League, she became the first female head coach of a professional men's hockey team last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just that it's going to happen sooner than later now.
Yeah. Eventually, it's not even going to be, we're going to be so far past the new, like, the history making of today. Like, 10 years from now, there are going to be so many women in high, like, visible positions in the National Hockey League that it's not even going to like be on the it's going to be a blip on the radar.
I was going to say, I mean, at some point you're going to have to just realize that this is no longer the old boys club.
Yeah.
Like that's what it's coming down to.
Exactly.
Like there are a lot of very capable, very skilled, very intelligent, very knowledgeable women mm-hmm. when it comes to hockey, and a lot of them are going to embarrass those men.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's the way it is.
Yep.
Can't get around it anymore. So keep smashing those ceilings, women. Mm-hmm. Obviously, still some out there to go through, but Jessica Campbell certainly put her foot through on the other day with her first game in the NHL. Congratulations
yeah.
to her.
Yeah. We are like one kind of...
Bailey Bram's best friend, too, eh? Did you know nice. That? Manitoba's Bailey Bram. Jessica Campbell's her best friend. Nice.
We are like one Dan Bylsma getting sick, like getting COVID or like... needing to go in for surgery away from Jessica Campbell being a head coach for like a spell in the NHL.
Give me that every single day. Put that into my veins right now. I want to see that.
Not Dan Bylsma should be like...
Not that I want to see Dan Bylsma.
Yeah, no. Like, that's not it.
But yeah.
It's like, hey, Dan, can you like take a vacation in the middle of the season for like a couple weeks?
Dan, would you mind just staying home for a while?
Yeah, that'd be funny. Let's do it.
Just take some time off. We're okay. Speaking of memorable nights, memorable moments, Utah had a memorable opening mm-hmm. night as they downed the Chicago Blackhawks by 5-2 score. And again, fantastic crowd there. 16,020 people in the Delta Center packed it to the roof, mm-hmm. even though half of them couldn't see one zone, but whatever. But it may be one of the more memorable nights for Utah owner Ryan Smith because of what happened in the concourse. According to reports coming out of Utah, the Utah Hockey Club sold over $120,000 worth of beer on opening night, the most they've ever sold for an NHL or an NBA game at the Delta Center since it opened.
That's incredible. For the fact that they are undersized in terms of seating capacity for an NHL rink and lower seating than they have for Utah Jazz games.
You might be asking, when did it open? October 4th, 1991.
So...
33 years ago.
Yeah. Which is wild to me. Also, I think, well, this is getting into like Mormons and Utah law, but I'm just surprised that they can sell beer at public venues in Utah.
Apparently they can at the Delta Center because they went crazy for it. Again, they even have a chug cam where the fans will boo you if you don't chug your beer fast enough.
That's awesome.
So it's called the beer light. Technically, the technical name for it is the Bud Light mm-hmm. beer cam. And they caught two fans pouring beer into their shoes and downing their beers in the third period from their shoes. But that's another story altogether.
That has a name, and I know what it is.
Okay,
it's called a shoey, and it is a tradition from Australia.
Well, there you go.
Because Daniel Ricciardo, who unceremoniously has had his F1 career ended by Red Bull, he popularized it in motor racing because whenever he would win a race, he would pour the champagne into his shoe and drink it on the podium.
For a shoey.
He got Sir Lewis Hamilton to do it with him.
Oh, nice. Interesting. I don't know if I want that kind of somebody else's shoe up there, but whatever. But just to keep things in perspective, the 24-ounce domestic can of beer at those games were going for between $14 and $16 at the game. But here's the catch.
God.
As we reported last week, the team's new concession strategy seems to be working. The mm-hmm. team reported that 7,400 food items were sold at the game last week. Or earlier this week, excuse me. So if you're selling
like it works.
If you're selling hot dog and nachos for $3 and you can get a beer for $14 or $15 as well, a 20 covers your beer and nachos.
Yeah.
Again,
exactly.
It might be elevated on the beer side. I get that it's an expensive price for beer. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, though, you're getting nachos for $3.
Yeah, but like the beer thing, it's slightly different.
Oh, it is.
You know, that would be coming directly from like a Molson or an Anheuser-Busch, and it's branded, so it has to be like kind of what they want it sold at.
Yeah.
Whereas the food, it's basically just like stock, like Aramark food that gets prepared and you get it at like rock bottom prices, so it's a little bit easier. But I expect, like, because I've brought up the Atlanta example multiple times at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, where their beers are discounted as well, it would not surprise me if somehow the Smith Group kind of maneuvers their way into a more beneficial deal so they can offer cheaper beer.
So the cheapest beer that was available, I was just reading the Salt Lake City report on this, mm-hmm. Salt Lake City Tribune's report on this. Cheapest beer that night was a Michelob Ultra, went for $13 at the Utah Jazz preseason game on Monday. Mm-hmm. It sold for $15 on Tuesday at Utah Hockey Club's first game. So they put the prices up $2 for the regular season. However, even at $15 a pop, that's 8,000 cans of beer they sold.
I'm doing the math.
8,000 cans of beer they sold to 16,000 people.
It's $120,000.
That's exactly what it is. But you think about that and you go, oh my God, like that's crazy to hear that kind of stuff. Like,
if they do that every game for their entire home schedule, that would be $4.9 million.
But you can't tell me that that hockey in Utah isn't going to work with the way they have this set up.
Yeah, like that was the thing is like that night had to silence so many doubters because everyone like when the move happened, like obviously fans of the Coyotes and hockey fans in Arizona had every right to be upset.
Oh, and still have every right to be upset. But yeah.
Like there were certain members of the media, particularly in Arizona,
yeah,
who were like, why are there no hockey fans in Utah? There's no history of professional hockey in Utah. It's not going to work. You're going to be moving somewhere else in a couple, you know, a little while. One particular hockey podcast that I remember whining about it for a while. But, like, that really showed, no, like, these people here in Utah, they love pro sports.
Yeah.
You put a product in front of them, they will go for it.
Dear Oakland Athletics, if you need a home.
Yeah.
I mean, they're only building a brand new baseball stadium for the Olympics that are coming in there.
Exactly.
Dear Oakland.
Yeah. Well, they want to play baseball in Las Vegas, so they want to overload the Las Vegas market with even more pro sports.
I'm sick of that Las Vegas market, but whatever.
That whole thing with the Athletics, that is
just a nightmare. Whatever. We can get into that whole thing on a different blog, but or a different podcast, a different radio show. But legitimately, Oakland's just dumb. So yep. Whatever. I know you want to talk about this because this was an important one to get in here. Yes. It was reported by Kevin Weeks earlier in the week that New York Rangers goaltender Igor Shesterkin rejected a contract offer from the Rangers that would have paid him $88 million over 8 years.
That's an $11 million contract.
That would have been the richest goaltender deal in NHL history had he accepted it, surpassing the Carey Price deal that paid him $10.5 million per season. Mm-hmm. As per Elliot Friedman, as he wrote in his 32 Thoughts article this week, quote, New York's highest paid player is the sublime and superb Artemi Panarin. His cap hit is slightly above $11.64 mm-hmm. million. I believe Shesterkin's representatives have a simple argument. Igor is your best player, and he should be compensated as such. Unquote.
So Artemi Panarin has the fourth highest AAV in the NHL. Fourth highest.
Okay.
The guys ahead of him go by the names of Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, and Austin Matthews.
Okay.
So Shesterkin's essentially arguing that he is likely more valuable than one or all of those guys.
So you bring up the AAV, and that's where Elliot went into percentage of cap, because it's becoming the critical sort of indicator as to where guys are going to be paid. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid currently occupies the largest slice of any cap at 15.72%. So, and yeah. Connor McDavid, you can argue, isn't worth that amount of money, but, I mean, there's no doubt that the NHL and the Edmonton Oilers benefit greatly by having Connor McDavid play
exactly.
in Edmonton. The aforementioned Panarin is at 14.29, as you said, fourth highest. 14.29% would put Shesterkin's number, if similar to Panarin's slice of the pie, somewhere around $12.6 million per season.
Yeah, that would put him as the third. He would be tied with Nathan MacKinnon for the second highest AAV in the NHL.
So we have to ask the question then, because again, the
Nathan
NHL,
MacKinnon, who just signed that contract.
But the NHL is a what have you done for me lately kind of leak. What have you done to earn that kind of mm-hmm. that kind of number? Shesterkin hasn't won anything of importance since 2020-2021 when he won the Vezina Trophy. Andrei Vasilevsky, who has multiple Stanley Cups and Vezina Trophies, likely deserves to get paid a little bit more than Shesterkin.
Yes.
Again, you can make the same argument for Connor Hellebuck.
Who took a discount to stay in Winnipeg.
Right. You can make the same argument for a guy, and again, I know he gets paid a lot, but a guy for like Sergei Bobrovsky, who won a Vezina in Florida, who legitimately won a Stanley Cup in Florida.
Mm-hmm. A guy who had multiple Veznas before he right. signed that contract.
Right.
On a kind of middling Columbus team as well.
So again, what does Shesterkin's representatives think when they look at the overall market for how rich goaltenders can get. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. We're not arguing that, that Shesterkin's not an important player here.
No.
He is an important player to the New York Rangers.
He is arguably, like, it depends on how you look at it, but he is arguably the most important player for the Rangers.
But if you're going to argue he's the most important player and you want him to get paid like that, what do you give up to get that? Because you're not going to be able to keep all the talent on the Rangers if he takes that kind of money. You're not going to be able to legitimately make him happy because his chances of winning go down at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we're staring down the exact problem. Like, they're essentially staring down the exact problem that the Toronto Maple Leafs have been mired in for years now.
Well, Chicago was mired in it as well.
Exactly.
When they had the big four.
But they had actually won by the time they signed all those contracts.
Right. They jumped on it early and got lucky, whereas Toronto hasn't got that same luck. So
That's the thing. It's like they're staring down this. You haven't had the success that Chicago had when they started handing out those big contracts to that core four.
Right.
You are going into the Toronto Maple Leafs scenario where you're handcuffing yourselves with these big cap hits, because then you have to fill out an entire roster to satisfy this thing. And for me, Shesterkin's camp is making the right argument in the wrong way, right? Because they're comparing him to his teammates,
right, yeah,
who play a completely different position from him and provide a completely different value to the team, when they should be looking at the market, as in the goalie market, and saying, where does he stack up compared to everybody else?
Okay, so when you look at a guy like Jeremy Swayman, who just signed.
Yes.
Does Jeremy Swayman deserve a contract similar to what Shesterkin gets? Or are we talking, is that the right amount of money for a guy like Igor Shesterkin, who legitimately hasn't won anything?
Exactly. Like, you've got Connor Hellebuyck, who has two Vezina trophies, who took a discount.
Yeah.
You're behind him. Let alone behind Bobrovsky, who has the cup in the Vezinas, behind Vasilevsky, who has the cup in the Vezinas, behind Marc-Andre Fleury, who has multiple Stanley Cups and one Vezina. Like, you can make the argument that, like, oh, this contract for this guy that I'm a comparable to was signed in this year at this percentage of cap, so prorated to this year and this cap level, I should get this.
But okay, so then the question becomes, when you talk about prorating, like, they're looking at future years where salary cap is going to go up, and they're going to say, hey, we're giving you fair market value for those future years. And don't get me wrong, I understand that the cap's going to go up, and I get that.
But that's the thing that the Toronto Maple Leafs said when they signed their core four to ridiculous AAVs, and then the cap didn't go up.
Okay, but it's going to go up because there's no more escrow. Like, we get that's going to happen, but with the CBA coming up, all of this could change, number one.
Exactly.
Number two, with the TV deal in Canada expiring in 2 years, that could change the entire outlook.
Because the value of the contract that was signed was not met.
Right.
Rogers lost money on that deal, and they've been trying to get out of it. So the NHL, when they sign this new deal, it might be lower than the value of the contract that they signed with Rogers.
And three, if you give Shesterkin this kind of money, say you give him $12.5 million. Say it's $12.5 million as a round number.
Yeah.
If you give him $12.5 million, what are you doing to the rest of your team when it comes to guys that may contribute just as much or more? Because now Artemi Panarin's going to look at that next contract and go, if he's 12 and a half, I'm worth 15.
Exactly. That's what happened in Toronto.
But this is the issue that we're going to run into every single time, because guys don't look at the guys. I get what agents are supposed to do.
Yeah, they're supposed to maximize value for their players,
right.
I'm sure.
But at the end of the day, though, when you hear players go, all I want to do is win, maybe we're looking at this from the wrong perspective now about maximum. Mm-hmm. I get that Shesterkin's not going to have, you know, a 30-year career in the NHL. He's not going to be able to earn for 30 years. I get that he's got to make some money and put some money away. I get how that works.
And he's going to be in his late 30s.
Right.
When this if he signs an 8-year deal, he's going to be close to his 40s.
But at the end of the day, you have
this is his last contract.
$88 million in your pocket. Why are we arguing over, we're quibbling over a million or a couple million dollars a year?
Yeah. Well, that's what happened. Like, here's the thing: is like, when you look at it as, because this shows kind of his perspective on it, he's looking more at, what do I get? Just what sign, do I get to
if
make?
If you don't like it, then, Igor, and I'll say this as nice
sign
as I can.
Sign an offer sheet.
If you don't like it, Igor, and I'll say this, you're not going to be able to go anywhere else for that amount of money.
Yeah.
So secondly, if you don't like it, sign a Shohei Ohtani deal. Take your money down the road then.
Yeah. If you're worried about that, like, but the thing is, like, you look at, you know, then we get back to the conversation of he's now looking at it as this is what I'm worth. I need to be the highest paid player on the team. It's me, 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 me. And that's going to cause an arms race within the Rangers because then everyone else is going to be like, well, if he gets that, I need to get this.
But it won't, though, because you're going to have to trade away Truba's contract has to go at that point because he's $8 million of cap space that they don't really want right now anyway. But you're legitimately going to have to get
Well, they already tried to trade him space.
And he already said he won't go anywhere. But again, this is the issue you're going to run into is that you're going to have to legitimately get rid of other key players on your team because you don't have the money to pay him. What does Alexis? What does Lafreniere come in at on his next contract?
The guy that's like finally showing what they drafted him for.
He has 150 points in 300 games. Yeah, granted, it's less than what he did in junior.
But you see the trajectory of his play.
Right, I was going to say the way that he has shown that the increased ability means that his salary is going to go up in a large direction.
Keandre Miller needs a new contract soon too.
But this is what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
I mean, then you get the Adam Foxes, you get all the other guys that are in there, and you go, there's a lot of talent on that Rangers team that we may not be able to sign going forward.
Yeah, you're going to have to send them away because your goaltender wants way too much money. Like, I'm sorry, the goaltender market's the way that it is. If you want to stretch it, okay, maybe you'll get a Sergei Bobrovsky deal. Sure. But the Sergei Bobrovsky deal happens on a team in Florida where you've got a bunch of players making less than they're worth because they wanted to win. There's a this is hilarious to me because the conversation is always like, okay, why would anybody want to play in Winnipeg? Why would anybody want to go there? Josh Morrissey, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, and Connor Hellebuck all took discounts off their market value to stay in Winnipeg because they believe they can win here and they like being here. And then you've got a player in New York City, arguably one of the most popular places to live and the place everyone wants to be and play, who's turning down $11 million a year because he doesn't think it's enough.
You're speaking about why do guys want to stay in Winnipeg, right? Here's the example, and I'll give this as nice as I can because Ratatash asked this to Adam Lowry about Connor Hellebuck taking personal leave for the last couple of days to deal with his own personal family stuff that's kind of going on. Here's what Captain Adam Lowry said about that. Okay, this is what he said verbatim to Ratatash. Quote. We're such a tight-knit group. Playing in Winnipeg, everyone kind of knocks playing here. Everyone is so close. We spend a lot of time together. When a guy's going through something, you want to be there as much as you can to support him. When he got back from the airport yesterday, I think everyone kind of had a little moment with him. Just to check in on him. Make sure he's doing okay. Make sure Andrea's doing okay. I think that's one of the great things about playing in those smaller markets is a tight-knit community. In turn, it kind of makes us a tight-knit team. Like I said earlier, he's such an important piece for our team. But family is so important that we just want to be there for him any way we can, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get that feeling in New York now when you hear guys talking like that?
No. I haven't gotten that feeling in New York for a long time.
But that's the thing, though. And you go, granted, Winnipeg might not make the Stanley Cup. Like, there's a whole factor of reasons why they may not.
Yeah.
But it's not because they're all not pulling in the same direction.
Yeah. They're all on the same page. They're all together. And, like, but this is the thing. Like, this is exactly what we see in Boston. And granted, they had this whole thing and you know, Cam Neely coming out and saying what he said and being stupid in front of the media. But, like, they still got Jeremy Swayman signed. We can argue about whether he's overpaid or not. They got him signed, and that is a team that historically gets guys to come in under what they're worth because they like playing in Boston. They want to play in Boston. They want to win in Boston. The same thing with Tampa Bay. Those guys take less to play in Tampa Bay so they can keep the band together.
But that's the thing, though. And I really look at this and I go, I really look at this and I go, if Shesterkin took $88 million, and again, that's a lot of money for a guy that may not deserve it yet. He hasn't proven anything yet. But if he took $88 million and went home with that, is he any worse off than taking, say,
10.5?
Well, at 11 million, is he any worse off than taking $12.5 million a season? What are you losing? Nothing. And yet you might be able to keep a couple of those players you want to keep around.
Yeah.
The Vincent Trocheks, the guys who legitimately go into the corners and do the dirty work for you are the guys you want to keep, and those are the guys that are going to have to go first.
Like, I'm sorry, Igor, can you win a Stanley Cup on your own? No, you cannot.
Apparently you can.
Can you go up there, score goals, and also defend and clean up the defensive zone so you get clean shots on you that you can see and then make those saves and then push the puck back up the ice and score more goals? No, you can't.
No, there's no way.
This isn't the NBA.
But again, this is where I shake my head and I go, as a goaltender, I understand what you're saying. You are one of the most important players on the team. But at the end of the day, though, if everybody's taking 15% of the pie, you don't have very much pie.
It's the same argument that we had when Martin Brodeur was around.
Right.
When the goalie market was artificially depressed because Martin Brodeur was in the arguably the greatest goaltender in the NHL in hockey history, you know, debatable, but the he was in the NHL into the 2010s, and he was the limit. No goaltender got more than Martin Brodeur up until the end of his career,
right?
Because every negotiation,
I get that
a goalie walked into the room with their GM and said, "I want $7 million. I want $8 million." And the GM said, "Martin Brodeur is getting $6 million. You're getting under $6 million. You are not Martin Brodeur."
But and again, I don't think that's artificially lowering the
that's creating
the market.
That's setting the value of the market.
It's legitimately the best player going, this is what I'm worth to my team.
Yes. Like the fact that Austin Matthews and Nathan MacKinnon have a higher cap hit than Connor McDavid is the exception, not the rule.
And it shouldn't be. It shouldn't even be an exception. It should be. Those guys are all unicorns. Like, let's be honest here. They're not the same as every other player in this league.
Austin Matthews scores 50 goals a season in his sleep.
But that's what I mean. Connor McDavid puts up 140 points, and nobody blinks an eye. Nathan MacKinnon scores 40 goals and has 70 assists, and everybody goes, it was a down year for him.
Yeah. Like,
they're unicorns. Let's stop trying to make ourselves into that, because you're not.
Exactly. You come in under those guys. It doesn't matter where you play. It doesn't matter what position. You are not Connor McDavid. You are not Nathan MacKinnon. You are not Austin Matthews. Sit down.
4 minutes left in the show. We got a couple of unicorns to talk about here. Ryan Stewart, your quick Ryan Stewart update. A little disappointment from everybody this week. The West Kent Steamers had their Friday, October 4th game against Fredericton postponed. They only played one game this weekend, and Stewart didn't see any action in the 6-5 win over Campbellton. Therefore, no new news about Rhea Stewart. She's still 2-0 on the season, still has a league-leading .50 goals against average, still has a league-leading .984 save percentage,
nice.
Still has one shutout, still has made 61 stops and 62 shots this year. The Steamers, the 4-2-1 Steamers, will host the 7-0 Summerside Western Capitals on Friday before heading to Pictou County, home of Sportsnet's Ken Reed, where they will meet the 3-3-1 Pictou County Weeks Crushers. So there's your update.
Mm-hmm.
The other unicorn we'll talk about quickly here, you may remember back in March that Brock University's Connor Unger signed with the Edmonton Oilers after going 26-0 in the OUA, a 2.15 goals against average and .932 save percentage. Unger set a new school record for wins that season, earning the Calgary native the OUA West Goaltender of the Year, OUA West Rookie of the Year honors, as well as a spot on the OUA West First All-Star Team and the OUA West All-Rookie Team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Oilers assigned him to the Fort Wayne Comets. I'm going to say right now, because she's already reached out to me, we will hear all about Connor Unger in the next couple of weeks, because Fiona Quinn has agreed to come back on the show and talk to us about Connor Unger at training camp for the Fort Wayne Comets. So
awesome.
We're going to have Fiona on in the next couple of weeks. A little bit of a preview right there for you folks as we get set for another ECHL season. She got lots of ideas, lots of thoughts on things as well, including that third jersey or that alternate jersey with the spaceman on it for the Comets that I know GM Jared likes. And beyond that, all the new teams, all the new rules in the ECHL, we're going to have a great conversation with her. Before we get out of here, 2 minutes left in the show. Jay, anything you want to say before we scramble to get going?
Once again, our thoughts are with everybody in Florida, Georgia, South and North Carolina. We hope you are picking the pieces back up if you are affected by any of the hurricanes. And As hurricane season continues, if you are recommended and asked to evacuate, please evacuate.
Please do so.
Your life is not worth it. You are irreplaceable. A house is.
We are going to evacuate this studio. Let Free Range Radio with Skippy come on here next here on 101.5 UMFM. Thanks for joining us here on the Hockey Show this week, folks. We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a good one. Enjoy the hockey. We're back in season. Covering all genres of music, including Swedish remakes of Rapper's Delight, you're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.